The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 451 on the podcast today. I have Nicola Duke, the lady with the charts, the Duchess of the charts, technical analyst. She's looking at Premier African Minerals, PREM, CloudTag, that's CTAG, Electo, ALO, BP, Metal Tiger. Plus, I also have Executive Director and Chief Executive Officer of DDD Group, Christopher Udall. Now, apart from the products they have going on, which is very interesting, and they're getting a lot of traction there, they have a very interesting legal situation going on, a lawsuit going on. And it's looking very promising for them because the legal company they've hired have a 90% success rate. And they're taking LG Electronics to court. And so this could prove very beneficial for DDD Group. So worth listening out for that. Also, at the request of private investors, I have George Roach, CEO of Premier African Minerals, on the podcast. Now, I've got to say, I was nearly not going to run this into you. I was going to pull it because the audio quality is quite poor. And through no fault of our own, George there is a busy man in Zimbabwe, up a hill on a mobile phone. So you add those, you know, two pieces of jigsaw to the equation there, and we see why it's a bit muffled. So I've sent the audio, actually, to Steve, my mate who we did the weekend podcast with, who's a bit of an audio genius. He's tried to clean it up, but he said it's not a lot you can do it. So I'm going to run it, but I do apologise if it's not very clear, because like I said, due to the technical issues of geography. At least he answers some investors' questions, and I think you'll be able to hear it, you know. Also on the podcast, Stock with Potential, suggested by Mark, is Berkeley Energia, or Energia, BKY. I've heard a lot about this company, and hopefully going to get them on the podcast very soon. And today's podcast is dedicated to Barabod, who's giving me a 5-star rating and cracking review on iTunes, taking my reviews, 5 stars, up to 129 5-star reviews on iTunes. And I do appreciate that because the podcast, as you know, I've been banging on about this. I'm quite proud of it. It's nearing the top 10. I was number 14 in the worldwide of best investing podcasts. So thank you very much. I'll read that review out later, but I would appreciate if you could do it too. And also, if you know a stock with potential, suggest it. Go to voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. Click one of my blogs there, and there's several links you can click on to interact with the podcast.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now, she's a regular, and she's the Duchess of the Chart, the Lady of the Technicals. It's Nicola Duke. You all right, Nick?
Hello, Justin. Yes, very good, thanks. Very glad it's Friday this week.
Yeah.
With a lot of sideways markets, stock indexes, the dollar. You know, the excitement has been the yen, I suppose, and perhaps oil, but
yeah, well,
just one of those weeks.
I've been out a second, and I saw that oil's up a little bit here. I don't know on what, but...
Yeah, has a nice rally, made a new high. I think it's a bit squeezy, you know, people, you know, there's a lot of people, like the fundamentals for oil are still very bad,
yeah.
But there's a lot of people who see what oil did before and how it rallied before and go, oh, I am not missing this rally, and buy it.
Yeah, and of course...
Can't ignore that.
No,
market sentiment.
Yeah.
You know, Trump's fundamentals. So.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, a lot of people have been saying, I mean, I've heard, you know, people saying, for the first half of the year, it's going to be trading around about $35, and it's exceeded that a little bit. And then they say, second half of the year, it should go even higher. So it's almost people are expecting that, aren't they? And they're hoping it'll happen, you know? So...
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, I think if US crude can get back above 41, that will go to 45 next.
Yeah.
At the moment, we're trading sort of 38. I think, you know, $40 will be difficult for US crude. You know, Brent's above it, but yeah. Now that, you know, this, once we get to the afternoon and everyone looks at the US oil, which for most, you know, traders is a bit cheaper to trade as well. So.
Yeah, well, do you know what? What stuck in my head is that you said before, and I quite like this, you said, I'm not a big fan of previous support being previous support. I quite like previous support being, you know, future resistance.
Exactly.
And like, and yes. So
Previous support becomes resistance and vice versa.
Yeah, so I'm looking at right now, the last high in the oil price pretty much, that I'm talking about Brent here, and if you look at a chart there, I'm looking at, what is it, the 8th month of last year, 24th. It dipped down and it just spiked down into 42.36. And then we've gone down below that since, and then it's come back up. And that, lo and behold, is the resistance we've been seeing of late. That's the high.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it needs to break exactly. that to 42.36 to get higher.
And so that previous high, you know, you might see some people jump in and try and sell it at, you know, around sort of 43. But I think that, you know, at 47.50, where we see the November lows and the August lows, which were at 47.80, I think that really in Brent, we're going to be looking at those. So 47.50, 47.80. And gosh, what a coincidence. That's where the 200-day is in the Brent too. So.
Do you know what's funny, Nick? What's scary, right? Is that I looked at the copper price on a chart, and I was thinking of you when you said that, you know, previous support, resistance, etc. And I tweeted out the chart, you know, and I said, look at this. It's copper's failed at a previous, support level. It's had resistance at a previous support level. And I tweeted out, and you retweeted it. And I thought, wow, that was odd. Because I did think of you, and I put a lot of sort of really odd lines in it. I couldn't draw a straight line. But, it was a messy chart.
Yeah, but you know. Yeah. If you had connected those lows, I looked at your copper chart, and you just drew a messy line. But if you had connected those two lows that had a slight slant up, you would have seen that line was exactly where copper stopped and turned lower.
Yeah, so. 23, it's back there.
So yeah, I don't mind a little slope on a trend line.
Yeah, that's exactly, cool. All right, well, let's get some stocks that have been suggested by people.
Now, again, I'm going to say people don't, like, I could not believe how excited people were to be selling stocks this week. Don't be too bearish. I do think that we need a bit of correction, but like this idea that, you know, the world is ending, I just can't buy it. Sorry.
No. Okay. Well, let's start off with somebody's on the podcast today. It's I've got the CEO of Premier African Minerals, PREM. Right now they're 0.65 of a pence, and the MACDs are turning down a bit. But what do you think of that chart, Nick?
Very nice. Very nice bounce off the lows at the start of February. And now we've traded sideways. We haven't, we've only, the sort of lows, which we've tagged three times, 1st of March, 29th of March, and then yesterday's lovely bullish hammer candle, are, you know, not even 50%. So this kind of triangle shape, when you see the sort of equal triangle sideways like that, that's a bull pennant.
Yeah.
If it's like a rectangle that tilts downwards, that's a bull flag. Yeah. But this, when it's a triangle shape sideways, that's a bull pennant. So we can say quite confidently that a break above 87, which was that previous high on the last day of March, is a breakout of our bull pennant. Mm-hmm. 200-day moving average is at 106. Yep. So right there, that gives us, you know, a 19% move higher.
Yeah.
Which is it. Yeah. So that would be our first target, and that's also a Fibonacci level at 106.
Yeah.
So that's your first target, which is 19% higher from the breakout entry. I'm not talking about where we are now. Mm. From the breakout, and then really I think we're going to 150, 154.
All right. Yes. And you know, just looking at moving averages,
when the moving averages go sideways, you need to look at the shape of the consolidation and trade a breakout of it. You can trade moves back to moving average when they're going a direction. So if a moving average is moving higher, sloping up each time it comes back to it, I think it's safe to buy off it. But when the moving averages are flat, like the 20, the 50 and the 100 day are here, we need to see a breakout. And so that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, so on the breakout though, is it good to buy on the breakout or wait for it to come back after the breakout?
Right, that's a very good question. Unless you're sitting watching it and doing it on a low time frame, I say scale in and buy some on the breakout, because if everybody else is looking at it, got an alarm, and a lot of buyers step in, there isn't going to be any pullback to that breakout level.
Yeah, I see. Yes. Okay. So
not before it hits your first target, which is 106.
Yeah. And so the breakout you're saying was 0.87, is it? You're saying 0.87, is that right? I think, yeah.
Yes, I am. Cool. Yeah.
All right. Well,
0.86 is that previous high.
Yeah, yeah. Cool.
So I would say if it back to 0.86, you know, is it? But that's, as you know, I don't like previous resistance being resistance again. But
yeah. Okay.
So, you know, and a close above the 20-day or a close above 0.7 would suggest we're moving higher. So.
All right. Marvellous. All right. The next one is cloud tag CTAG. Let me just type it into my chart here and see what we're at.
Cloud tag.
Yeah, so we're at 3.08 pence. And yeah, it's had a little breakout, isn't it? From
it really has. That's a nice looking chart, but and also, you know, really nice congested sideways. Hasn't, you know, broken out and then collapsed. It's held up really well, which is bullish. I think that potentially back down to 2.67 or that spike high at 2.73. So around there, any little dips back are good buys in this stock. The 200-day moving average is down at 2.43, but it's just starting to turn up again. And as long as we keep going sideways without too much retracement, the 200-day will catch up and move higher. All of them will.
Yeah.
The biggest clue is going to be a MACD or an RSI oscillator bottoming out and turning up again on this one.
Yeah.
So it looks good. I wouldn't actually buy it right here. I think you need to be a little bit patient, but it's certainly bullish and I like it. And I like, if you have to go back, I think it's been a long time since this stock was above its 200-day moving average, let's put it that way.
Yeah, and I can see that point at 2.75. There's been a lot of resistance there previously, hasn't there? There's been quite a few spike ups to that level and back down and going nowhere. And then finally, like I said, that one time it broke through it. And now it's almost staying above that.
So this stock, you know, really since this, you know, was issued in March 2013, it's been one way trading down and it's finally bottomed. It's finally, you know, it's literally trended lower every time lower lows, lower highs. And for the first time, we've taken out that previous swing high, which is 2.72, which was January high. That's why I like that level. If we come back to test it, I don't think we should go back below it.
Okay, cool. All right, well, let's go on to the next one, which is Alecto. And that's ALO. And the price right now is 0.09 pence as a tiddler.
Lovely. Okay, so really good bull bear support line in this stock is at 0.08. Mm-hmm. I would like to see the RSI or the oscillator a bit lower. It's got, you know, since its breakout, it's really got quite volatile. But at 0.8 is also the 20-day moving average. That's also the previous lows in August 2015. It is a pretty good support level. I think that you can buy against this, and I really like it. The next target is going to be so you can draw a sloping trend line from the June 2015 high through to September 1. People can see it on the charts. And so that'll be at 0.15, so nearly doubling our money.
Yeah, so... Really. So
and then the first resistance, remember I talk about, if you go back to the opening day's price range of this stock, that was between 0.2 and 0.25. So really that 0.2 level, I think it will be, when we can get going, a bit of a magnet. And for this stock, this is the first time back above the 200-day moving average since February 2014. So this is a big deal. If we can hold it above it and close this week above it, we might need to spend a few days or even a week or two consolidating sideways, but this does look quite good. And I think eventually that 0.2, 0.25 will suck it back up.
Yeah. I was going to ask you a question actually about that. When a stock breaks through the 200-day moving average, and then it does come back and falls below it. I mean, is that an issue or what? Because,
No, you will see a lot of chopping around, around it. You will, and you'll see, but just be patient.
Yeah. Okay. Because another one like that I hold watching is Standard Chartered. It's broken above the 200. It's come back now, just below that. And I'm thinking, is that a bad sign?
Yeah, and then wait. Mm. So let it sort itself out. Let the buyers and let everyone else fight over whether they're going to be long or short. And then just wait for it to settle down. And you will see a pattern, and it will eventually find support above it and you should be able to buy it.
Okay, let's go to the other.
But you can see, yeah. You know, in this stock, this is a good example. In November, we had a go and we never were able to close above it. But this time we have, and we had a good luck, and we just had another dip back below. But we've only dipped back to the 20-day moving average and previous highs and really found good support there. So that's why I like this stock.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to the other end of the spectrum, you know, capitalization-wise. That's BP dot, obviously the BP. So it's at £3.39.3, and it's been a bit of a messy chart, hasn't it, of late?
Very. Oh, gosh, since December, very ugly. I think everybody got quite excited on the long side in November. That wasn't the... acquisition, was it, or the, was that the BG
no, that was Shell. So yeah, BP, I think they've announced I think they finally came out with this litigation money, didn't they, billion or something ridiculous for the Gulf of Mexico, I think. And a couple of people have said, though, I've seen quite a few preferring Royal Dutch Shell over BP because of this, and also now Royal Dutch Shell have got BG, which is a gas element to it, so a liquid natural gas. But right. This is, I mean, it seems to be at support levels, doesn't it, right now, or what?
When I look at a monthly chart and a long-term chart, you know, 320 is really good support for BP, and yeah, we had a little look below in February, but I really like how it's found support. But you can draw a trend line from the November high, connect the February high, March high, and then end of March high, and I think if we get above that, so the resistance is actually at 360, so that's my sort of bull bear line. Okay. If we get back above 360, the 200-day moving average is then at 365. Above there, I think that's a pretty good double bottom.
Yeah.
And our first target up there would be 440, and the second target is 475.
Yeah. So it should hold around here, shouldn't it? I mean, you could try and scale in here a little bit, maybe, you know, have a play around.
You could. If it pays some dividends, it's not, you know, the worst stock to own. Yeah. But yeah, no, so I would be looking for longs around 360, 365.
Marvellous. All right, let's go with...
And against 320 and an upside target of 440 and 475.
Yeah. Okay, let's go with the last one. Stock I own, actually, is very popular at the moment because it's gone crazy bonkers. I bought this at about one, I think. 1.3.
Please tell me that you have taken some profit in Metal Tiger.
Yes. Well, no, listen. The thing is, I descaled on the way up. I doubled the money. I took half my stake. Okay. So I'm playing with free money now. But I sort of believe in a longer-term story. This, even though it's overcooked majorly at the moment, I'm just thinking, okay, where's it going to come back to now? And I did buy a little bit. It had a violent drop today, and I bought a little bit more. Not a lot.
What price?
I've got 5.08 pence, and they're down today majorly because they've been rallying like crazy.
Well, we're going to see. I think probably it's going to be a weekly bearish shooting star candle, which is the upside down hammer, which you see at tops.
Yeah,
I think if you rode this up, well done. Because you know my targets. I remember when I looked at this, my targets were sort of like 2.5, mm-hmm. and it far exceeded these. Yes, so first support is at 4.075 actually.
Okay.
Second support is at 3.465.
Wow.
If you're not in this, this has got to settle down. It's so overbought, it's silly, on a weekly scale, never mind, you know, unless you're trading this really short term, if you're looking for an investment, this isn't it. I do think it should come back to one of those levels and find some nice support. I think we'll look at this again in a month.
Yeah.
It's not, this one's done.
Okay.
Like dinner.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, okay. Well,
I love it. I don't think it's going to come all the way back to nothing. But it, you know, there's no, I don't see any sort of buy entry here.
Okay. Well, I've made a mistake then. But listen,
I do think, unfortunately, you know, although I like the 4.7 level, we could come back to that level, 4.075. We could come back to that level and go sideways. I do think it's probably more likely that we're going to come back to 3.47. That's where the daily 20 moving average is. I would anything back to the daily 20 moving average. By the time it gets back to it, I think you could be looking for buys, but that's a few weeks away.
Hang on a second.
At least two.
Yeah, do you know what? Hang on. My chart is wrong here. It's got 5.08 on it. I'm looking at the quote on here, and it's 3.95. So that's where it is at the moment.
Yeah, so it's down today, even further. Right. So 3.47 is the support today.
Yeah, okay.
That's where the daily 20 is. Don't buy it yet. Wait till next week. Wait and see if we can find some support there. The previous swing high, which was the 17th of March, is slightly below that at 3.25.
Oh, well, I bought some at 3.25 today.
I think you could, yes. Oh, did you?
Yeah, I put a limit order in and they filled it, yeah.
Let's wait and see where we can close. If we can close above the 20-day moving average at 3.45, then I think we should be able to hold it. But we have to spend some time working off these overbought conditions.
Okay, all right.
And calming down.
Marvellous.
So, like, it sounds great that it would come all the way back there and then go straight all the way back up again the next day, but it doesn't always work like that, unfortunately.
No. Hang on, my chart just updated there. Yeah, 3.95 on the chart there. We see a massive wick at the top, massive wick below.
Let this just calm down. It's very volatile.
Yeah.
If we can, daily closes above 3.45 would add some confidence that we might have stopped going down.
Marvellous. All right. Okay. All right. Cool stuff.
But so dips. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
That's what I would say.
All right, marvellous. Okay. The Metal Tiger, he's been leaping like a maniac. It's far.
Looks lovely, but
far exceeded what I thought it would happen there. So I'm happy with what I've got there. And I'll add later when it calms down, I think. Marvellous, Nick. All right, if you can send us the charts, that'd be fantastic. And I'll put them on the site there so people can listen to the podcast and look at the charts as annotated by yourself there. And thank you very much, Nick, and have a nice weekend. Speak next week.
Very welcome. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chief Executive Officer of DDD Group, it's Chris Udall. Thanks very much for talking to me, Chris.
Thanks very much indeed, Justin. It's nice to be here again.
Yeah, well, I've got to say, if there's a bit of a delay, then it's because you are, I don't know what the weather's there like, but I imagine it's nice generally there. So just tell us where you are, Chris. Just make us jealous.
Right. Well, we're in our new office here in Marina Del Rey, California, in the heart of what's now known as Silicon Beach, which is the communities of Santa Monica and Venice and Playa Vista, Marina Del Rey, El Segundo, here in Southern California. It's on the coast of Los Angeles. And it's home now to not just our new subsidiary, GenMe, which is a wholly owned subsidiary of DDD Group PLC, but it's also become I'm home to some fairly large companies like Facebook and Google and Snapchat who are within striking distance of our front door.
Never heard of them. I know. That's amazing to be in that sort of company there, isn't it? And I can't imagine the amount of money slushing around that area. But what's the weather there like? I mean, it's obviously April here. The sun is trying to come through, but it's not winning at the moment. Is there rain? What is that? Marina Del Rey just sounds like it'll always be basking in sun rays, you know?
Unfortunately not. Today and for the next couple of days, we're getting one of those El Nino storms and it's going to be raining. So right now I'm looking out of the window and it's cloudy and grey and overcast and probably not that much different to the United Kingdom right now.
Good. That makes me feel a lot better. All right. At least I'm not so jealous now. At least you haven't got the weather as well as everything else. Okay, Chris. Well, listen, you were on before, but for people who missed that, give us a rundown of the products you do there and what you do exactly at DDD Group.
Well, I think obviously the thing that we're probably best known for to date has been our 3D technologies, which have been shipped by companies like Samsung, Sony, LG, Lenovo, etc. in their 3D consumer products, televisions, PCs, mobile phones, etc. We've licensed a technology that analyzes 2D images in real time and converts them into 3D. And that's been shipped in, I think, over 56 million products now. So that's been a very good business for us. It was one of the first areas where we could exploit our world-leading expertise in image analysis. And then more recently, because of the slowdown in the 3D market, we've added some pretty exciting new products. And they're aimed at much larger audiences of hundreds of millions of customers worldwide. So we have some new products that we launched 6 months or so ago, one of which is called TriDef Smart Cam, and that's aimed at people who are doing game casting, webcasting, video conferencing, things like Skype. And we have a very exciting new product that we just launched, which is called UPIX, U-P-I-X. That's in the Android store right now, and that's a product that's currently in beta, but it allows you to take interactive selfies. About 93 million selfies are shared every day on social media, so the addressable market is quite big. What you can do is our image analysis technology lets you take the ideal background for your selfie using the camera that faces away from you in your phone, and then the camera that faces you switches on and takes your picture and gets rid of all the background and then pops you on top of the background picture that you've taken, lets you move yourself around, resize yourself, and then share that. And the really cool thing is if somebody else happens to have our UPIX app that receives this selfie you've sent them, they can do the same thing. They can take your picture with your background behind it, take their background out, and then pop their picture into your selfie and share it back with you. So these 93 million photos that people are taking every day have suddenly become interactive and iterative. And we call this new experience what we call social photography.
Yeah. So let's go, first of all, let's start off with TriDef Smart Cam. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at your website here. Just explain about that. I'm not a gamer at all. I use Skype, but it's for audio. So how are gamers using this, for example?
Well, I think fundamentally what's happened over the course of the last few years is that broadband has become much more pervasive in people's homes and also on their mobile devices. So where we would normally chat to people using voice, an increasing number of people are now chatting to each other using video. And that's just the impact of faster bandwidth on people's lives. What we're doing with Smart Cam is we've targeted some emerging markets that probably aren't as well understood in the UK, but here in the United States, there's a service called Twitch.tv, And that has rapidly grown to become the fourth largest source of video on the internet behind services like Netflix and Hulu and YouTube. And what's happening on Twitch.tv is there's about 1.8 million plus game players across a wide range of age groups every month who create videos of themselves playing games on their consoles and on their PCs, and they post those on Twitch, and about 100 million people a month watch those videos. And one of the very popular things to do for these game creators, these 1.8 million people a month who are creating the videos, is instead of just seeing the video game that they're playing, the output that they see on their PC screen or their television, they like to overlay themselves in the bottom right-hand corner, and actually you can see them commentating on how they're playing on that particular level of the game. Mm-hmm. To date, what they've had to do is they've had to go and buy some fairly expensive green screen technology, and it's normally about $150, $200 worth of equipment that they have to use, and they have to hang this green screen in their bedroom or their living room, wherever they're recording these videos. And that's fairly cumbersome and expensive for game players who are typically quite cost conscious. So what Smart Cam allows you to do is it takes that webcam that you've already got in your PC and your notebook, and it does the same thing as I've just described as UPIX. Our software finds you in the picture that your video camera is capturing, and all that clutter and junk in your bedroom or den behind you suddenly disappears. And then we hand that off to applications like XSplit, which is the software that the kids are using to make the videos for their games, or AVaMedia's RE Central is another product that we work quite closely with. And they can very quickly and easily integrate this video feed into the game videos that they're making, and then they share it with their physical commentary on the top of it. For something like Skype, it's very similar. You know, Skype calls are becoming increasingly popular for business as well as consumer use. And I think the Wall Street Journal a month or so ago had this article, you know, the top 10 things that you need to do for video conferencing, sort of video conferencing etiquette. And one of them was make sure you're in a fairly tidy place. Well, the nice thing now with TriDev SmartCam, which works with products like WebEx, GoToMeeting and Skype, is that our software can look at your picture in your rather, you know, cluttered office, or if you're in an airport lounge, and it gets rid of all the background, and then you can put your corporate logo in there, you can put your holiday photos in the background. So it makes video chat and video conferencing a lot more visually stimulating, and gives you a lot more flexibility where you can do these things without having to worry about what's going on in the background.
Yeah, I like that, because I'm looking on your website there. There's a guy there, you know, on a screen, and in the background there, I don't know where he actually is, but in the background, it looks like he's just standing in front of a nice, you know, swimming pool. You know, it's almost like Hawaiian, but the background's a nice palm trees there, blue sky, blue pool, and he's talking to a girl in a room there, I think, that's looking not as nice, you know. So how good is this? I mean, you know, I mean, cause I remember trying Google Hangouts, and they could put backgrounds there, but it wasn't that good on Google Hangouts. It was like breaking up, and it was quite hard to do. I mean, is it very effective?
Yes, it is. And in fact, we've got, I think right now, about 30,000 plus copies of TriDev SmartCam are getting shipped out to end users each month. The trick has been, and we had some ability to look at the other solutions that were in the marketplace and actually decide, based on our experience of actually working in the PC market for the last several years, how we could package this product up in a way that was likely to be most effective. And it's a combination of things. One, it has to work. And I think from our perspective, you know, the thing that we do probably better than any company on the face of the planet is this image analysis. If you look at the alternative solutions from companies like Apple, the first thing that you've got to do if you want to use the background replacement that comes with things like FaceTime is you've got to switch the camera on so it can see the background that you're in without you in it, which means that you've got to go out of shot of the camera. And then you sit back down in front of it and it figures out where you are, and it does a reasonably good job of tracking you. But we felt that that was very inconvenient. You know, our view was you just need to be able to sit in front of your PC and get on with it. Mm. So we've been very focused on that. The product itself has various levels of performance in there, so that some of our customers in China are using fairly low-powered PCs. And therefore, you trade off a little bit of the accuracy that we're detecting around the edge of the viewer when they're in the video chat at very low performance settings. And then on the other end of the extreme, you've got game players or business users who've got very powerful PCs, and they expect very, very accurate background detection. So as long as the lighting's good, as it would be if you're using any video product, we can normally pick you out and track you and do that in a very effective way.
Okay, and so how many do you say you're shipping of this a month?
We're shipping right now, I think, somewhere in the region of 30,000 plus. If you look at the last few months of 2015, when we have our current royalty reports for, I think we shipped about 180,000, 190,000 copies of the software from when we launched it in late May to the end of 2015. And that's, I think it sort of underscores what we've said to the investment community, which is that these markets that we're in are not niche markets and they're not small. Mm. It took us about 2 years to sell, to ship the first couple of 100,000 copies of our TriDev 3D software. And it took us a few months to ship the first couple of 100,000 copies of this new TriDev SmartCam product. So, you know, when you're dealing with user bases like Twitch, which has, you know, 1.8 million users a month, Skype, which has about 80 million peak concurrent users who are using the service a month. And our software is compatible with 20 plus of the most popular of these applications. We can get to some, decent size install bases fairly quickly.
Yeah. So and as for sort of mobile, so it comes in an app form and you just download it. Is that the case or what?
That's right. Yeah. So in the case of UPix, which is the mobile app, the application itself is free to download. What we do is when you're creating the pictures with the product, there is a little UPix logo on the right-hand corner of the screen. So every picture that you create, it says UPix app. Mm-hmm. And the business model is quite simple. You give people the app for free, and then when they decide they want to make a lot of these and remove your annoying logo from the bottom corner, they pay us 99 cents. It's an in-app purchase.
I was going to say,
as we get
and with TriDef, is that the same kind of business model? How does that work? How do you monetize that?
Well, one of the things that we did with TriDef, and it's slightly different to what we did with the 3D products. In the 3D products, they were premium products. They were more expensive than a 2D PC, for instance. And you had to have a special piece of technology, a 3D screen in your PC or your television, in order for our software to deliver its value. We license to the equipment manufacturer, the PC maker, the TV maker, Samsung, Sony, etc. And typically what you end up with there is you end up with this law of diminishing sort of value, where as they want to make lower and lower cost products, then you're expected to reduce the value on a per unit basis of your license. And what we said in the new 2D products is we wanted to move away from that. So We'll still do that OEM licensing in the right circumstances. If an OEM comes to us with a very large number of products and we can agree on a price that makes sense financially, we'll do that. But we shifted the business model to what we call an affiliate model. So we partner up with companies like Split Media Labs, who make the XSplit software, like Avon Media, who make this RE Central software that the video gamers are using to make their videos. Mm-hmm. And they take our technology to their customers and make them aware of it. Those customers download that software directly from DDD's TriDef website. It's a free 7 to 14 day evaluation, depending on which of these products you're working with. And at the end of that 7 days or 14 days, at the end of that trial period, you can decide whether you want to buy it or not. If you buy it, you buy it from DDD. It's anywhere between $10 and $15 for the software, depending on which version of it you're buying. And at the end of every calendar quarter, we send a summary to those partners, XSplit or Avamedia, let them know how many copies of our software their customers bought, and we share that value with them. So we're actually creating incremental value for these companies from their user base. And very importantly, the partnership that we get, they know exactly who their customers are, where to reach them, and how to reach them. So typically, we share about 30% of the value with those affiliate partners. So we keep 70%, they keep 30%. But that's a very effective way that means that we don't have to spend significant marketing dollars reaching out to all of their customers individually.
Yeah, that's interesting. And have you any idea of the conversion? I mean, of the people, like you said, who download your stuff, like the UPix there and TriDef, of all the people who use it for free, the actual people that start paying for it. Any idea of the conversion rate still?
Well, it's a little too early because the UPix app is still in beta, so we don't really have a sensible metric yet for that. It was only launched just over a month ago, and I think we're waiting until we have the Apple version finished for iOS customers at the end of April, early May, before we really start getting stuck into pushing heavily on that. But on the smart cam, what we see is the conversion rate is around about 4 to 5 times the industry norm. Mm-hmm. For these game players. So typically when you're doing this sort of free evaluation software, about 2% or so of your customers will finish a trial and actually buy it. And in the case of SmartCam, what we've seen consistently since we launched it with Split Media in September last year is that the conversion rates are up in the 9 to 10% range.
Okay. Marvellous stuff. And something else you got going on, it's not sort of part of the business, but it's obviously, it's linked with the business, is this lawsuit explained with Samsung, isn't it? I think LG, wasn't it? Sorry.
That's right, yes. It's actually LG Electronics.
LG Electronics, sorry. But yeah. So take us through what's happened here and the timeline.
Well, we obviously have done quite a bit of business with LG, with their PCs and their mobile devices, with our 3D technologies. And we became aware that the TVs that they're selling here in the US and elsewhere were performing a 3D function that we felt needed a license to the claims of some patents that we own. We tried to resolve that with LG, as we've explained in the lawsuit that we filed, but that wasn't successful. So we partnered up with a very large US law firm who specializes in patent litigation, amongst other things. They're one of the top firms in this field. I think they've won about 90% of the cases that they've brought for very large clients like Samsung and Motorola and others. And we filed a lawsuit in July last year here in Los Angeles, California, alleging the infringement of some of the claims of our patent library by LG's 3D conversion process. That is going, it's proceeding on its way through the courts. I think the next court date is on the 18th of April. LG, as I think is to be expected in these cases, has, there's a fairly typical set of things that somebody will try and do to defend themselves when they're, accused of patent infringement, and they filed what's called a 101 motion that suggests that some of our patents aren't valid for various reasons. We aren't particularly concerned about that, and that's going to be heard on, I think, the 18th of April. There's been a series of disclosures between DDD and LG as part of this process, and I think there's nothing that we've seen in the disclosures that have been provided that changes the opinion that we laid out in that lawsuit, and that is that there's some infringement of the patent claims that we own that is going on within this product.
Yeah, and it's, it's very interesting from sort of an investor point of view, because like you said, this is a very eminent company who have a 90% hit rate or success rate in the courts there. And so, and are you looking around about, what, $25 million damages? Is that what you're looking at?
Well, I think the 20 to 25 million range that we gave, and I think we gave that in the middle of last year, is really a combination of the success that we see if we're able to deliver not just LG, but some other licenses that we see in other markets outside of consumer electronics. So that's not the number that's exclusive to LG. In fact, we haven't given a number in any of the filings that we think the litigation with LG should be worth. That will be determined, I would imagine, much later on in the process as we go through the various steps of the litigation. But I think from our point of view, we've been successful in licensing these technologies, and it's generated somewhere in the region of $25 million plus. I think we see a value combined if we're able to successfully license these with partners like Quinn Emanuel, a similar amount of money over the course of that licensing program, if it's successful.
Yeah, well, do you know what? Even if it's a fifth of that, that is more than your market cap. So that's quite a substantial sum anyway, isn't it? It's very interesting. And you said timeline-wise, there's going to be this, this date in April, and they're going to try and obviously defend their position. And then, is there any idea as to how long this will go on for?
Well, the next key date in the process after the date in April is currently slated for early September. And the early September hearing is what's called a Markman hearing, where the specific claims of the patent that we are alleging infringement of are agreed upon by DDD and LG in the court. And then the arguments around infringement are prepared and then heard in front of the court a few months after that. So the 101 motion is really orientated around whether some of the subject matter matter of DDD's patents is patentable or not, and you know, we obviously feel they are. You know, we don't just have one patent in one country, we have multiple patents in the family that we've brought against LG, and they're granted in, I think, 22 countries. So, you know, the 22 patent officers have looked at these patents and determined that the material is patentable. So I would be surprised if that changes as a result of this.
Okay, marvellous. Well, Chris, you know, if an investor's listening right now and they need a quick summary as to why they should add DDD Group to their watch list, can you give us the three, you know, sort of bullet points as to why they should do that?
Well, I think that there's really a couple of ones that are product related, and another one that's management related. I think the product related ones are, you know, we've proven that we can license our innovative inventions and technologies into some large markets with some large partners. So I think that the management team has a proven track record. I think the share price is really reflective of the process or the transformation that the company is going through to move away from the niche 3D market to these larger 2D markets. So I think if you're investing in companies, generally speaking, you always want a company that can reach a very large addressable market. And 93 million selfies a day is the target for our UPix app that's now there. There's well over a billion people who are doing video conferencing, video chat, and game casting every month that we can target the SmartCam application at. Now, these products are actually built, they're in the market, and they're generating revenue. So tangible, real products. And I think behind that, the innovation is really driven by intellectual property. You know, as we've continued to build these new products, we've continued to expand our patent library. And I think as the situation with LG demonstrates, we're able to get the right partners on board to help us defend our position there. And we're also equally keen to make sure our position is defended. You know, we don't like seeing unlicensed use of our inventions by anybody.
Marvellous. Well, Chris, you know, thank you for coming on again. And, you know, I look forward to speaking to you when you have some more news out. Thanks very much.
Great. Thank you very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
Joining me on the podcast right now is Chief Executive Officer and Executive Chairman of Premier African Minerals. That's PREM. It's George Roach. George, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much indeed, and thank you for the opportunity of talking to you.
Now, thank you for coming on, George. Listen, first and foremost, I've got to say, it's not the brightest line, telephone line, because explain where you are, George, at the moment.
Well, at the moment, I'm standing on top of a hill just outside the town of Wangi in northwest Zimbabwe. That's located probably about 15 kilometers away from our RHA project and one or two other projects that we have in this part of the world. The RHA mine, and that's the right term for it, has progressed from what was an exploration and development project into mining. It's fully equipped. It has a plant. It has been in early stages of mining since June last year. We've gone through phases that included some work in an open pit. We have gone through many of the earlier teething problems and understanding problems on our plant. We have certain upgrades to our plant which are due during the course of this month. And we've also recently moved our mining from the open pits to underground and are rapidly re-equipping an existing 120-meter shaft. We'll soon be taking ore from the lower levels of the mine. That is well mineralized, and quite looking forward to getting that into our plant later this month, early May.
Okay, brilliant stuff. Well, I mean, you've got lots of things going on there. So is the RHA mine there, is that the priority at the moment, is it?
Yes, it is. The priority at the moment is to bring RHA to a point where it is cash positive. Our focus as a company in Zimbabwe is largely at achieving that. We haven't lost sight of our other projects. We've got some pretty exciting lithium, quite substantial lithium-based projects in Zimbabwe as well. It's an interesting market at the moment, and there are some other opportunities that we are also contemplating right now. So it is our first objective to see RHA cash positive, but we are not losing sight of other pretty valuable projects that we have as well.
Okay, well, listen, I've got some questions from private investors, and I think you covered a couple of them there, but I'll go through them anyway so we can segment them. First and foremost, when will the RHA resource update be issued? And you sort of said that then, I think, didn't you?
No, I didn't cover the resource update. We have been working on updating our resource for some time now, and on a number of occasions I've indicated that it is imminent, so I understand the question, I understand why it's being asked. I'm on site at the moment to do a verification exercise on a lot of the geological work that has been done that has resulted in the information, and some of the information is going into the updates on the resource. A lot of this is QAQC type work. Some of it is revisiting areas that were previously sampled and doing some check sampling and so on it. Some of it is rechecking survey areas and the old workings. There's a wide spectrum of check and validation work that is being done at the moment, which we expect to lead to us being able to finalize a resource update. And I don't want to be drawn on a specific time because I get tripped up too often on that one. But it's a priority, and we're working pretty hard to get it done as quickly as we can.
Okay, when will the RHA project be profitable, is the next question.
Well, the project will be profitable subject to three things. The first is throughput and tonnage on the plant. And I did mention that there are fixes on the crushing circuits in the plant that have been agreed, that are due to be installed in short order, and work on that has already commenced. I'd like to see that finished this month. So that's the first requirement. The second requirement relates to grade that we feed through the plant. Grade is dependent on bringing the lower levels of the mine, if our so-called 870 level, the new Fertic is at. That requires completion of the re-equipping of the 120-meter vertical main shaft. What we need to re-equip the shaft is on site. The workers are working flat out on getting this done at the moment. I think we're reasonably confident that that's going to be completed this month. So that's the second component is grade. The third component on this is recovery in the plant. We know that the plant recovers. Wolframite, we've recovered, we've exported, we've got some more. There's another shipment going during the course of next week. So we know that the plant recovers wolframite. What we need to see is the throughput at grade as we anticipate, which is later this month, and then it's a case of recovery. So to answer that question, those are the three components that are necessary to see RHA operating positively, cash positively. Can this happen towards the end of this month? Yes, it can, but as I say, that's a future event. Those are things that still have to occur and be proved, but it's what we're working towards, and I think we're reasonably confident that we will achieve it.
Okay, this is a big one, George, so it may take a while to answer this one. Is there the possibility of selling our 2% share in Circum before Circum themselves have a liquidity event, possibly to Steve Dattles himself, the CEO? If so, would we be likely to receive fair value if we did? Or is it more financially sound to wait for Circum to announce their own liquidity event to ride that wave, thinking that if we sell early, it could fund acquisitions that George has mentioned in recent RNSs instead of potentially having to go to the market to fund them?
Hello, are you there?
Yes.
Hello. Sorry, I thought I suddenly was concerned that we lost you for a moment. All right, let me just come back. You mentioned Stephen Bartels. I obviously can't speak for Stephen Bartels. You know, that would be something that he would have to, you have to ask him. But my own view is that I don't think that we would be offered a good enough price if we were to try and do that kind of deal now. You know, good enough, in inverted commas, not quite sure what that is. I don't think we'd have any difficulty being offered a price which is comparable to the last placement price. Now, the last placement price on Circum shares was before the DFS details were released, and that was $2 a share. So, you know, if one had to sell it, I suppose one could expect to get around about that. Would I want to recommend selling it at that price? I don't think so. Does the possibility and the prospect of getting a price which I think is more representative than it should be, to what extent does that offset the cost of any other financing that one may need? I have a view at the moment that I'd like to hold on to the Circum stock a little longer. That's my view. That's not a definitive and finite opinion, but it is my view at the moment.
Okay, I don't know if you can answer this one, but it says, what do you think Stephen Bartels' plan is once Circum license is granted? Sell the asset?
Well, you know, again, I can't talk with Stephen and I can't talk with the board of Circum. I mean, they're an independent company, and you know, Stephen is only one of the shareholders. You need to ask all of them. You don't have to ask the other significant shareholders involved in that. I would expect, knowing some of the people there, that if they get a decent offer, they are going to sell. But let me just correct one comment that you have made. You referred to when they obtained a license, a mining license. The facts are that under the Ethiopian regime, only the holder of the exploration license can apply for a mining license. Nobody else can apply for this thing. And the mining license, and again, in inverted commas, delay, because in fact it is a delay, the actual granting of the license is normally done simultaneous with the signing of a convention that governs the mining period. And that convention will deal with special tax considerations, for example, like depreciation and various other things like that, which are quite important in terms of what your overall mine is going to be worth at the end of the day. So I don't think that there should be any fixation or concern or anything like that relates to the issuing of a mining license, because that's going to come. That's going to go to Circum. It can't go anywhere else, but it will be done, I believe, simultaneous with the signing of a proper mining convention. So I hope that helps on that.
Yeah, okay. And last question here, George, is why aren't the directors buying?
I think it's a bit of a generalization, because this director you're talking to has certainly seen all his loans converted out into shares. So I've shown whatever confidence I think could reasonably be expected of me, and I've been doing that for many years. I think that other directors are assisting in other ways as well. For example, in the lead up to RHA becoming cash generative, other directors have held off on taking fees, for example. Some of them indicated they're happy to do conversions of that if necessary. So, you know, they think that there isn't support. Are they buying directly? You know, I'd have to ask them that. I've asked one or two of them before, and on behalf of shareholders, I'm happy to ask them again. But, you know, that really is something that they would need to answer.
Okay, well, lovely, George. Listen, you know, if anyone needs a sort of summary of the positive points of Prem there, could you give us three reasons why an investor should put Premier African Minerals on their watch list?
Well, it starts off, the first reason is that at a time, RHA, without a doubt, is going to, in my opinion, at a time, RHA is going to become cash generative. And I do still believe that when RHA gets to that point, that RHA is the kind of deposit and the kind of environment that's going to continue for a long time. So I think that's the first. The second that people should be conscious and aware of is the lithium opportunities that we have at this time. And we are beginning to move some of our effort and some of our focus in that direction, as I've already said to you. The third is that Circon has said before publicly that they expect a liquidity event during the course of this year. At the moment, Circon's NPV that they have published and put out is $2.1 billion. Their fully diluted position is a fraction over 100 million shares. Prem holds effectively 2%. Now, if there is a sale or whatever other liquidity event there is, I think it's going to be significant to Prem African Minerals. It is definitely going to be a significant moment when it does occur. And I think that together with the properties we have, together with the possibility of some other developments, expansions, acquisitions, and so on, I think that proves that Premier is here for the long term, not the short term.
Okay, George, thank you very much for speaking to us, and hopefully we can speak again soon when you have some news out.
I'm happy to talk to you anytime you wish.
Okay, today's stock with potential, suggested by Mark, has suggested this, and it's Berkeley Energia, or Energia, depends where you pronounce it. Ticker is BKY. What does the company do? It's a uranium miner in Spain. How many shares does the company have in issue? 180. What's the current price and market cap of the company? Current price is about 27 pence, a market cap 48 million. How much cash or debt does the company have? Has $8 million cash. Nice. There's three reasons why you think this company has potential. Number one, a large value uranium asset in Spain with large upside potential. Number two, outlook for uranium prices very good. Large margins even at today's depressed prices. And number three, major players backing, including BlackRock. Doesn't get much bigger backer than that. So that's Berkeley Energia. Energia. I mean, Zach was on the podcast a while back and he knows a bit of Spanish and he said that's how he's pronounced it. Energia. And that's BK. Obviously, you don't need the Spanish pronunciation. All you need is a ticker, BKY. Please do your own research on any stock mentioned on this podcast because, you know, never act on a tip or recommendation. Do some research, please. And you learn, you know, I've learned by... In fact, the best way to learn is to make mistakes, you know. And when that mistake is, you know, monetary, it really does. You do learn a lesson. So don't let me, you know, find out yourself. I've jumped in tips in the past and recommendations, and I've been burned. So do your own recommendation there, your own due diligence, I should say. By the way, thank you very much, Barabod. And he's got nice find on iTunes, he says. He's given me a 5-star rating there. And he says, I stumbled on these podcasts, and I'm glad I did. Very insightful for newbies like myself. And the videos, they realise, are on their website, are just as good. And I do release a video every week. If you sign up to the sharepickers.com newsletter, I try and release a video once a week. And, you know, feel free to suggest something, because sometimes I run out of ideas. So if it's something you'd like me to cover and I know something about it, I'll try my best to do a little video on that. Thank you, Barabod, for the 5-star rating and review. It's muchos apreciados. And please, give me a review. It does help with listener figures. The more popular this podcast gets, the longer it'll continue. People still listen to it, still want it like they do right now. I'll still do it. So thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.